Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the 7th of April.
Yeah.
And we're continuing our coverage of the worldwide economic shutdown.
Yeah. And you know what tonight
is? China's turned back up.
It did turn back up a little bit, and they got the economy moving, and people are scurrying around the streets. Very exciting. But I don't think that's going to last. I have this bad feeling. Don't you?
No, not really.
You think they're just going to go along right back to where they were, or is it going to turn around and bite them in the ass that they possibly allowed people to start opening up, going around? You know, there was people, I saw some pictures of people going on a hike, but there was like thousands of people next to each other.
There's a lot of people in China.
Oh yeah. But seriously, I don't know. I think there's going to be the potential for—
You're wearing masks?
Some were, some weren't.
Generally speaking, the Chinese are pretty good about wearing masks.
Yeah. The whole Asian area is really good. They've got that down. And we're going to have to do that. You know, what was once a kind of like, oh, what's that all about? It's going to be, I think, a normal part of our daily lives here. Maybe not every day.
Well, we see around here, everyone's wearing a mask.
Yeah. And now it's becoming normal.
So much for facial recognition.
Gone. Well, big news. It is our 500th episode.
It's astonishing.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah.
So let me give you a couple of headlines of some of the things we'll be talking about this evening. Volatility remains, but now it's the upside. We saw a big move yesterday. FOMO is back in the markets. Got a 7% move on the markets yesterday. And some of that is the hedge funds. A lot of talk about hedge funds scrambling to buy to keep ahead of the indices. But we have this thin trading going on. Every headline is either moving markets to the upside or the downside. You know, now the algos seem to be aligned with how many people are dying, the curve, and when we're going to reopen.
Yeah.
So today, I looked at the, right before I went to sleep last night, I look at the futures. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, they're kind of like coming in a little bit, nothing crazy. I wake up this morning, I'm like, oh, what happened there? It was like up 500 points, 600 points, 700 points.
Yeah. The Tuesday, except for last Tuesday, every Tuesday has been an up market.
Turnaround Tuesday. And I got in, markets are moving up 900 by the time things get rolling in the morning, stays there for most of the day. And then by the end of the day, rolls down, finishes in the red today.
Yeah, it cracked me up.
Terrible. So we have a happy belated birthday to John. It was your birthday Sunday, I believe.
That'd be me, yeah.
Yep. And we got the cough button box.
Yeah, got a cough button because is the cough still there? Do you still have this lingering cough?
I still have this lingering slight cough. It isn't like it was.
No.
Where, you know, there was this kind of heaviness and this horrible, I don't want to go through the disgustingness of it, but it was just there. Now it's just a lingering kind of in the morning a little bit and in the evenings a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got some limericks too. So, question is this big bounce that we saw, this big move on Monday, a start of something that is the next rally? Or is it just another one of those bear markets bounces, dead cat bounces in a bear market?
Bull trap.
Yeah, bull trap. I think so. You know, when I started to see that the crap stocks, and those are now the cruise lines, the hotels, the airlines, anything in the leisure business, movie theaters, restaurant stocks are starting to move up dramatically. I realize, we're starting to get some bottom fishing here, and it's very thin.
You're getting cocky.
Yeah. So crude oil was the big story last week, by the way. If you watch what happened there on Thursday, I think it was Thursday, President Trump says, you know, is it going to be a big deal here? It looks like he talked to Saudi Arabia, and he says Saudi Arabia talked to Russia, and everybody's in for a cut. Everybody's so they look like they're going to cut it like 10 million barrels per day.
Yeah, that's what the talk was.
Yep. Well, it was, and that spiked oil dramatically on Thursday and started coming in. President Trump says, another tweet, it looks like it could be maybe 15 million barrels a day. Once that happened, I know, uh-oh, nothing's going on here. Then we saw denials from Russia. We saw Saudi Arabia saying, well, we'll cut if you will, reflecting both the United States and Russia and OPEC in general. And Russia says, well, we'll do it if you will. Yeah, and then everybody's, great. Yeah, the whole thing is ridiculous.
Now they're dud.
Yep. So oil's at 27. It was down as low as 20.
Is it at 24 right now? I think it's at 24.
It may have come down at the end of the day today. It was down 8% today. Yeah. So 8% would be about $2. Yeah, it could be 25, 20, 24. And we are seeing some pretty significant short squeezes as though, you know, again, index buying is, again, pushing up everything in the market. And we saw that throughout the morning today. And each time we see this, it looks like that investors are not going after necessarily individual stocks, but they're going after maybe sector indices. Like, all right, we're buying the airlines. All right, we're buying the cruise lines. And everything just kind, you know, really starts to move up. So the big news is we have to have these narratives to make us, I guess, feel good or to set the stage for something or something that we could wrap our hands around. Because if I was to start throwing out all these numbers and saying, you know, it looks like the earnings on the S&P 500 are going to be from 175, where they were expected to be, down to 150. And if we take a multiple of 12 in a recessionary time or 14, we can get an estimate. If I start doing all these numbers, people are going to be like, well, I don't know what that means. So what do we have is simplified. The new thing is there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about this a little bit. Who said this first?
Well, whoever said it first, this goes back into the 1920s or before, but there was a little back and forth with some New York Times writers going on about how General Westmoreland used to say this about the Vietnam War, and they go on, and a bunch of other New York Times reporters and writers and editors were retweeting it, and I'm thinking, what are you guys trying to do here? You're trying to equate General Westmoreland and the Vietnam War with Trump. And it's nonsense. These people are off the rails.
Well, what I always say is when everybody talks about the light at the end of the tunnel, I always ask the question, is the light the sun and the lovely conditions that are going to be on the other side?
Or is it a train coming your way?
Yeah, Rick, is it a railroad car coming right at me? Locomotive coming right at me that's going to plow me down. So right now we have the Dow Jones Industrials down about 18 or 19% for the year. S&P is down about 17. NASDAQ's down about 10 or so. And I got the news today. I got the postponement email from Jay.
Okay, what was this?
From Jay.
Oh, the wedding. Yeah, yeah. She had to move her wedding.
Is she like
she got stuck in the wedding quagmire.
Is she just distraught?
Well, she's irked.
Yeah, well, naturally. So then you had to go through the whole calculation of when's it going to be safe, right? How long do we do this?
Yeah, they pushed it out to October, which seems pretty safe.
Yeah. Well, that's good because I was planning on coming. I think we even had plane tickets.
Yeah, I think so.
And we were kind of bummed about this whole thing. So anyway, so I wrote her back today saying we're very happy that at least we'll be able to be there with you. All right, so now talking about show number 500, let's kind of give everybody who maybe some of the newer listeners, maybe some of the people that have been with us for a while, but give them a little bit of a history lesson. I thought it would be interesting. So going way back here. Now, do you know when the first DH Unplugged was released?
Well, 500 episodes, and we probably missed about 20, probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah. So it was actually September 16th, 2008.
Okay.
Which is about a year after No Agenda. I looked that up today, too. It was like, No Agenda was like October of 2007, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. And I think, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Disciplined Investor was, I thought it was March of 2007, something like that. But I thought you would just, if you could give the story about how we came together and how this all started, I thought people would be pretty interested in that.
I don't remember.
Oh, I remember.
Well, I do know that we met up sometime before the show began at a little restaurant on Gilman Street in Berkeley. And you had been doing this other podcast for a while, and I'd been doing No Agenda for about a year.
And you're doing Twit.
And I was doing, right, I was doing a lot of Twit. I was, like, on Twit all the time.
And are you doing that other show? You were doing, I don't think you were doing Grumpy Old Men or whatever that was.
I was doing a Tech 5 news report or something like that. And I think I still had some video podcasts I was doing over at Mevio, the Tech Grouch and the Tech Hippie.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started to do this show, and it was actually Eric DeShille who named it because we didn't have a good name for it.
So just to get back to this, I'll tell you how the story that I remember how this all started. So we met up. Of course, a love affair started from the very beginning. And then we started talking. And I remember very distinctly that we would talk about once a week. And we would talk about the markets because at that point, things were not fun, right? I mean, markets were falling apart. And I remember it was my kind of weekly ability to just kind of get stuff off my chest. And I was at my house out in Western Florida. I would go out in the backyard and I would kind of pace around my backyard as I talked to you for about an hour. I remember this very distinctly. And then one day you said, you know, a lot of people would
we're
be
wasting content.
Yeah, well, exactly is what you said. You know, a lot of people would be really interested in what we're talking about. And I'm thinking, what? I don't understand. And you're like, yeah, this would be a great podcast. I'm like, I don't understand. But okay, let's do it. So I don't remember what the original format of this was, because when I look back, I can't even find the file online. It's probably in my archive somewhere.
It was pretty much the same. I solicited Lisa Bettany to do the voices.
Yes.
And I wrote a script for her. And it probably took a couple of months after we started the show to get her to finally finish it. She's not a voiceover pro, but she could be if she wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to, like, you know, keep begging her to do it. And so she finally did. And she gave me about four versions of each of the stuff. And I just laid that over an old 1930 song. And because the music fit in with her voice and we made it the theme, and that was the then we just stuck with that because it was fine. It was good. And you liked her voice and the whole thing was great.
Yep.
And then we started cranking the show out, and it was a conversation that we decided to, it was content. It was good content. I mean, I see this, I mean, like the No Agenda show is kind of the same way. It's two guys with a lot of information backed up.
Yep.
Talking about it, or with not just yakking. I mean, because I've seen these, you know, you hear a lot of podcasts with two guys just yak. They never really have to bring out any facts or stats, or they don't read anything, or they don't have anything to say other than what they think.
Yep.
And so we always had information to convey, and that was the way it worked.
Yeah, a lot of podcasts, they fill half of it with curse words of some sort just to kind of get.
Oh, yeah, a lot of cussing.
Just a lot of that stuff. I mean, we hardly, every once in a while when I get really riled, I'll throw out something here or there, but I'm pretty careful because I remember in the early days of podcasting, that was a no-no, right? You know, back in the days when we first started, it was like, you know, you can't have any explicit content or you have to name it as such.
Oh, maybe. There may have been some restriction, but I don't think that stops most people.
Right.
And the problem I've always had with it is it's like, is that you just talk like that all the time where you sound like a truck driver that's irked about something? Because it's a lot of people, it's as though they never get to cuss enough. So they got a podcast, right. And so now they get to swear a lot. And so everyone gets to, ooh, that's edgy.
Yeah.
I never liked
the idea. It's like the George Carlin approach to podcasting. Got to have those words to make people think that you're really, you know, to try to, I don't know. It's just stupid. Just stupid. I mean, there are some times where it's necessary and it does fit the actual bill. I mean, there's a lot of times that I, I do. Well,
it doesn't bother me that much. It's just something I think.
Right.
It does, unless it really adds to it. Just cussing just doesn't really. I mean, if it adds, yeah, okay, but it doesn't usually. It's just gratuitous, and so I always think it's almost a kind of virtue signaling. Look at, I can swear.
Yeah, I'm hoping that one day. You know, right now, if you have a game show and you start, maybe you call the game show Name That, that title song and you say, you know, okay, the Jeffersons, can you sing that? And Gilligan's Island, can you sing that one, right? And I'm hoping that one day our end song in particular is remembered as, hey, that was DH Unplugged. Right? Because that's a good one, that song, and has a lot of good words. Everybody loves that song. Anyway, let's get
it's a
back.
Great song. I had one couple of guys demand copies of it. It's Ben Selvin. You can usually find it if you look around.
Yep. So no, just to let you know, we are not going to be updating the theme song in any time soon.
You don't want to do that. You want to very rare that show like this ever changes their theme song because it's almost a trademark.
Yep, exactly.
Unless it's a piece of crap to begin with, then you change it.
Yeah. Let's get back to some of the work that we're doing here tonight. Number one, Japan now announcing state of emergency. I think it's going into effect tonight as the infection rate rises. I thought they were kind of contained there. And it was really interesting because I really thought that Japan, because of the timing of the Lunar New Year, where a lot of Chinese people go to Japan for vacations, I thought it was going to be a real hotspot for a while, but it kind of was just, you know, not much going on there. And then all of a sudden it's starting to get worse and worse. So the state of emergency could last up to 2 years with a possible 1 year extension. This is this state of emergency that they could put on. And they're announcing about $1 trillion in stimulus.
Yeah, but the state of emergency isn't shelter in place like we've got in these states.
It's more of a recommendation. It's more like what we're going to call this. It's like when you have areas that have a bad storm and they call it a disaster, state of disaster, whatever they call it. It's kind of like that. It's more of a label and until they get to a shelter in place. So the Fed outlook, Fed's been coming up with some interesting things. We're now starting to see some of the old timers start to show up. And I always find it fascinating, unless this trend breaks, but whenever somebody leaves their post, they seem to have a whole different view of things. When somebody's working as the Fed chair, or they're maybe the president of one of the Federal Reserves, the ones around the country, they're all toeing the party line. Things are going to be okay. We got enough reserves. We have plenty of room. We have a lot of powder that's dry. We have other programs that we can come up with. The economy is going to do well, all that, right? Then when they retire, all of a sudden it's like, you know, we're going into a recession. And concerned that we're really using too much of the interest rates to do it. We need to get fiscal on top of the monetary stimulus because it's not enough for fiscal. I mean, it's crazy. So former Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen was out yesterday thinking that the central bank is not in a position at this point where it needs to buy equities. I don't know where that came up. Somebody asked her that question, but thinks lawmakers should at least give them more leeway in the future. So that right there.
What does that even mean?
Well, Japan.
She means that they should be able to be buying equities like, you know, like a sovereign nation fund thing.
Yep, exactly. That's what Japan does. Japan owns like 75% of the index ETFs in the Japanese on the Nikkei exchange.
Well, they just buy companies. I mean, this you might as well have our government buy GM. They're gonna give them a bailout again soon.
Mm-hmm.
They're already singing the blues. GM is already singing the blues.
Doesn't this clearly display where the Fed's motives are, even though they say it has nothing to do with markets? And even though they contend that, you know what, they're looking at the markets, but that doesn't really come into the equation of what they're doing.
Yes, the original intent of these guys, or at least I don't know what the actual original intent was in 1917, but the intent of these guys has always been, recently, has been to keep the inflation at 2%.
Their current, and also to keep the banking situation solid. That was the big thing when he went to check out. And now they have two mandates, which is technically a third, but they have inflation at a reasonable level and full employment or employment and price stability. Now, price stability, you could say, well, is that price stability in terms of price of things related to inflation, or is that price stability related to markets? That's what I think they're talking about there. So I think that, you know, this whole idea of they really understand, and everybody needs to understand that the Fed is going to be there to a certain point, but they can't do everything. We saw that Japan's government, Bank of Japan, was buying all of these assets over all this time. Their markets still go down. Doesn't mean markets can't go down. But when they announce that, they can actually show a significant support for markets, and that does help, you know, sentiment and confidence. So at the same time, she said, at one side, she says, you know, maybe we need a little bit more leeway to buy things that we need to buy. And maybe on the other hand, she says, at the same time, the current employment rate or the unemployment rate could be 13%, while economic growth is going to be down 30% or more. So, and right now, I think we're looking at close to about, I think when we come into this week, last week I calculated about 8.8%. We're going to be well in the 11% to 12% by next week, this week.
I wonder what our buddy at Shadow Stats is saying.
Well, there you go. I got that link. You see it?
Oh, yeah, there it is.
There it is, right there. I thought you'd say that, so I read your mind. Been together 500 shows now. I figured, there it is. So there's a link on there, and this image and chart will come up. Go over to the show notes of episode number 500 on DH Unplugged, and you can see this. We'll try to describe it at the same time.
It's pretty funny. Yeah, he's got this thing that's coming over the top, and it's like starting to go down below 20%. He's got it. It's been over 20% since the Obama administration. And it's been hanging in there. It's been coming down with Trump. It's been dropping back down toward 20. And then the most recent thing, it's just gone straight up back to the not worse than the worst of the Obama era, but it's actually probably still a little less than that, but yeah. It's pretty much on that. It's on a pace to go to 25% on his numbers.
Yeah, but the spike is pretty substantial. So right now we're seeing that the official rate is what? You know, I thought this was kind of interesting. Look at the official rate is, what, 4.4% right now. The broadest measure is like 9%. And Shadow Stats is at, what, 23?
It looks like 22.5, yeah. Actually.
So there you got it.
Yeah.
It's going to spike pretty well next week. In the in the framework of God will provide, the pastor of the Little Tabernacle Church near Baton Rouge held services on Sunday in defiance of a stay-at-home order issued by Louisiana because of the coronavirus pandemic, and telling worshipers they had nothing to fear but fear itself. So everybody's invoking these famous wartime lines. You have nothing to fear but fear itself.
I think that was a Depression line. I think if Franklin Roosevelt pushed that line, I think it was, I don't know, was that World War II line or was that a Depression line?
Fear, but.
We have nothing to fear but fear itself.
I'm looking at it.
In his Rooseveltian accent. I'll look it up.
Phrase, yes, in the inauguration 1933 of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So that was.
Yeah, it's about the economy.
Yep. So they're bringing that into church here now. Now, you would think that this is stupid, right? I mean, do you think this is a good idea? Do you think they should be allowed to do this?
To do what?
To gather.
Well, legally, it's a church. They don't. The Constitution protects them. If he wants to bring everyone to a room and preach to them, it's totally legal, whether it's right or whether they should do it or not, or whether they should go and do what a lot of these guys have done, which set up online systems.
It seems very unchristian-like to me to be doing this and then potentially infecting a group of people, then infecting other people, and then also putting a strain on the hospital system because of this, because they have to work. My feeling of this is, I'll tell you my feeling. The Jew is telling you my feeling, okay? If you can't worship at home and you don't believe God can be talked to or prayed to and talked to it at home, then you're not religious, you're not Christian, you're not worthy anyway.
That sounds like something you'd say.
Well, it is something I'd say.
How are you going to collect money?
Oh, well, that now that's another story. They can do a GoFundMe account with the plate.
They could do that, but I don't know how advanced these guys are. They tend to be old school. Use that term twice today. With their ability to collect money, they don't. I don't think too many churches have thought about GoFundMe or the two or three other of these operations that are very effective.
They need to contact the Jews, because I'll tell you something. My temple, we're good at this. We don't pass around anything.
Jews.
Yeah, the problem with Jews are a lot. We don't. You know, there's no heaven and hell, so you don't get that hellfire sermon that if you don't give, you're going to hell. So yeah. There's other tactics and other things that you have to pull. But my temple did an online only 48-hour fundraiser.
Ooh.
And they had
that's a good idea.
Two or three families. This was a couple of months ago, but they had two or three families that matched. They raised like $580,000 in 48 hours.
Nice.
So.
Well, I would say that I honestly believe that this pastor was not, he was doing it to make a point. And this wasn't in Florida?
Yeah, this was in Louisiana.
Or Georgia, it's one of those places. It was in Louisiana.
This one was Louisiana.
He was doing it to make some sort of a point. I don't know what his point was. It was going against the grain.
Yep. All right, let's talk about the real estate mortgage forbearance laws that have recently been in here, okay, that have been instituted. So basically, for any reason, anyone can request and will get forbearance on your mortgage. Are you aware of this?
No.
Yep. So
what does this mean?
Well, let me give you the whole story and then I'll bring it back to this. So real estate mortgage forbearance request jumped 2,000%. Over the last couple of weeks, as borrowers seek relief during the outbreak. The law now states that anyone can request forbearance of up to 90 days and possibly 1 year, depending on the circumstances, worth of payments. Payments that are not made will be added to the back end of your mortgage. And there is no reason that they can't, that the banks or the mortgage companies can refuse you.
Huh.
So if you go on your bank online and you probably say, there's probably something about car loans. I was recently on Bank of America. It said, concerned about car loans and mortgages during this time, blah, blah, blah. Click here. And you can just click the button, check the button, and you don't have to pay for 90 days or upwards of a year. There's a few things. Now, the problem is, and you have to pay it eventually. But again, it'd be tacked on the back. The problem is that mortgage companies, mortgage service companies that may have issued bonds that are utilized to, you know, because you get a mortgage a lot of times and they sell it off. So you have all these mortgage companies and banks, of course.
A lot of times. Yep. All the time. Right.
So you have all these, and what do? They package them up and they sell them as securitized mortgages. And the problem is that these companies that are now issuing and allowing for the forbearance are not collecting, let's call it 3 months worth of payments. But they still have to pay the bondholders. So these mortgage companies are having a real problem. Mortgage service companies in particular, like I listed a few symbols here. You should see their stock prices. They're bad, very bad. Mr. Cooper, Ocwen Financial. You got symbol RCB, TWO, RNZ. You got ETFs like MBB, SPMB. These are mortgage services. Now, just today, with all this going on, because they set up this CARES Act very quickly, which they had to do, and I think they overlooked some of the things that it could be being a problem for. So these companies are concerned they're going to go out of business. The Fed may be stepping in to provide relief for the mortgage service companies. And some of these companies were up 25-30% today, which is still way away from where they are. These companies are going to have a lot of problems because not only do you have this forbearance going on, but you have the potential for further delinquencies, and you have the potential for people, well, going bankrupt, right? If they don't have any money, if their jobs don't come back.
Yeah, and they got kicked out of work and the whole thing can happen.
Big problem here. You have the similar problems with rental units in some of the big cities, in some of the buildings where people just can't pay their monthly rent.
And there's a number of groups. My son knows one of them, or one of the guys leading one of these deals. They got the money. They can pay the rent, but they're going to not pay the rent.
Yep. Sure.
We won't. We're not going to pay our rent until, you know, for 3 months, period.
Mm-hmm. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
Because money's due. Money's due the bank. This kind of spreads up and down and out.
Yeah.
And then you wonder if you have this situation going on with all these jobs lost, people now, a lot more people potentially going to be working from home for an extended period of time. What happens not only to the rental market of offices, commercial rental space, office commercial rental space, but also what about the prices of the buildings themselves? Who wants
they have to go down.
Yep.
So, and there's another factor, which is that there are a number of quote-unquote entrepreneurs who decided that their way to riches was to buy a bunch of distressed properties and push them into the Airbnb market.
Uh-huh.
And they have many of them have 10 units, maybe more. And now nobody's doing any Airbnb because nobody's doing anything. You can't do anything. I mean, you could. I mean, it's just nothing to do. I mean, right now, I jump on a plane and go to Paris cheap. On pretty much of an empty plane and get to Paris. And then when I get to Paris, the cops tell me to get off the street. There's nothing to do. And so these Airbnb guys are all going to go under.
Well, the Airbnb just got an infusion of about $1 billion in the last couple of days. And you have to wonder, and they also talked about helping out their Airbnbers. You got to wonder, this is something I've always been concerned about, was that the property boom that we've had is much different than the last time. The last time people bought multiple houses, tried to flip them, decided that they'll get in, get out. They got stuck with some of them, bought vacation homes, et cetera. Now they bought them with the idea that, good news. I got this Airbnb thing and I can easily rent it and make my payment.
Right.
So you have all these.
All you do is rent it enough to make payments and you accumulate a lot of wealth.
And now you have all these people that don't have enough for 1 month's worth of payments if they're out of work.
Yeah, right. Because they have too many of these properties. Yeah. They got in too deep.
Yeah.
Or as they used to say in the South, they tried to drill with too big an auger.
Yep, much too big an auger. Large into a small hole. So, you know, here we are with, if you really look at all of the things that are involved with this, I go back to, I'm very happy holding a large amount of cash right now, selectively buying some stocks, hedging out some portfolio positions. If the markets go up, we don't follow it for the moment. I'm happy about that. Markets go down, don't necessarily follow that for the moment. You know, you got to be really concerned about what is going to be the long-term effect of this, even if, so let's set the stage, even if on April 30th, which, by the way, is not happening. I don't think April 30th is happening. April 6th is done. Right? Adam's over? Yeah,
the April 6th thing is not even just, 30th. What do you think? You think it's going to go beyond 30th?
There has been, first of all, Larry Kudlow is on TV talking about today that we hope to reopen businesses in 4 to 8 weeks. I'm thinking 4 to 8 weeks. He said that today. I'm like, 4 weeks is over the April 30th time to begin with. And by the way, Larry Kudlow is always the happy guy with the very, the optimistic view. Right.
Yeah, he's the guy. Right. Well, that's why he was hired.
Right. Right. And he's like 4 to 8 weeks. I'm thinking 4 to 8 weeks. Well, how does that work? The second thing was, and maybe it was me picking this up, yesterday's presidential I love Donald Trump meeting where Mike Pence has his paper and thanks the president for everything that he's ever done. That meeting. But one of the things that happened was a question was asked to President Trump. And he said, the question was something like, do you think we'll get the businesses open and economy back open April 30th? And he says, I'm not going to answer the question. And you know why? Now, I don't know.
And you know why?
He said that. And I read that as, because I don't want to spook people or probably not going to happen. I don't know. I don't know how to read that.
I would read it following this closely, Trump anyway. I would read it as saying to the press because they will hound him if he does anything other.
Mm.
So if it goes 2 days over, they'll hound him. If he opens it up too soon. They're going to hound him about, hey, how come you didn't wait to the 30th, you know, if it backfires. So that, I believe, is what he meant when he said, you know why.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know. Even if we do, so back to my point, even if we do open up April 30th, I don't know what that exactly looks like, but if we have, do you think people are running out to get an Airbnb?
No.
Whereas if somebody rented,
you can open it up April 30th, but it doesn't mean it's going to recover. And I don't think it's going to recover for months.
Do you think that people would rather go to a hotel if they were going to do so or go to an Airbnb first?
If they were going to have, they had to go out at, that's a good question. I there may be enough people that still, you know, kind of rely on Airbnb. I think a hotel, especially if they lowered their rates and put some good deals out there, they could quash Airbnb.
I would think that it's all about the sterilization process. And if the hotels can come out with a standardization of sterilization of the rooms, at least, which you can't rely on from an Airbnb from an individual owner.
Right.
So that's
yeah,
my
this
concern.
This is a marketing thing. The Hotel Marketing Association, whoever they are, have to take that idea, what you just said, and promote it.
Yep. All right, let's talk about Boris Johnson for a second. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson was admitted to the hospital for tests on Sunday after suffering persistent coronavirus symptoms 10 days after testing positive for the virus. Then he went to the ICU. Now, there's a lot of talk about, well, he's doing pretty well. He's breathing on his own. You know, so they're trying to say he's not being intubated at this point. But what's really fascinating, I don't know if there's any other updates of this because they're keeping it quite hush. I thought a couple of things were really interesting. Number one, the Queen, right about the same time this is going on, comes out to make a public television appearance. And she hasn't done so in a long time. So I wonder if she's really trying to set the stage and get people calm for the potential of an unfortunate situation with Boris Johnson.
Maybe.
But what's really fascinating about this is that, I don't know if you know this probably, lacking a written constitution, Britain has no codified order of succession for prime minister.
They appoint someone to be a temporary guy, and then they have to have another election.
Right. So the Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab is going to now take the reins as Prime Minister, or ex, or former, or sidelined
pro tem or something.
Boris Johnson is getting better. Hopefully, he's going to do well. Young guy, 55 years old. Hopefully, he'll do well, and he's a strong guy. So I wanted to also explore the idea of what's going to be different on the other side. So a couple of thoughts, and maybe you can help me with some of this. So will more people
together a list.
Oh?
I don't have the list in front of me, but I have been putting it together. So most of my ideas are pretty fresh. But go on with what you think some of the few things that are going to change.
So the possibility of people working from home and forget the whole WeWork thing. You know, people are going to work from home. As a matter of fact, there was a report from Wayfair yesterday, the furniture delivery company, or the furniture company that delivers, the online company, that their sales are way up for office equipment because people weren't set up for this. So they need like a desk.
No, very few people are either set up, and some people aren't even mentally equipped to do it.
I couldn't do it. There's no way.
I could do it like I'm falling off a log because I've been doing it since 1985, pretty much.
Right. Open offices, a thing of the past? Kind of one of those big-ass offices.
I'm going to have to write some of these down to add to my list.
Yep. I mean, you know, those offices where I don't know how people work, where everybody's chattering all over the place, walking around in everybody's space. People that are standing up at their desk typing, then they walk around, of course, get a cup of coffee or something like that.
Yeah, the movie to see is Office Space to really see what's
Less face-to-face meetings, so therefore less business travel. People can get on all sorts of – people are going to discover that, I didn't know Skype. You could do video calls. You know, people you know, I mean, people are going to get into that whole – I had to help a couple of people today. They're like, I want to be able to share somebody's screen, look at somebody's screen because I want to help them set up Skype. I said, wait. They have Skype? Yes, they have Skype. Can you do a video call? Yes. There's a button that says share screen on it. You can do a full screen share on Skype. So kind of stupid. Masks.
Yeah, people, yeah.
Somebody's got to get into the mask, the custom and designer mask business.
That's, we're pretty close to that.
I think that has to happen. I mean,
but the designer masks right now are kind of hack designers. I mean, if you take some of the hot shots and you have Chanel or some of these Milan fashion houses starting to do those masks and charging $50 for one, those things will sell like hotcakes.
Yeah.
In fact, they can have a whole fashion show with people walking up and down the thing with a mask on.
Somebody in the chat room just, see, there's a chat room. A DH Unplugged mask.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yep, perfect. So anyway, these things, I mean, there's going to be more things that are going to be changing because I think that we have to be ready for these kind of situations, whether or not there is really going to be another outbreak sometime in the future. But, you know, the amount of people that are on this planet and the potential for God knows what to be spreading around, it makes sense in this kind of environment to be a little bit more careful, don't you think?
Well, I think that, you know, if they expect everyone to start going to the baseball stadium overnight and football games and indoor, especially the indoor places like
hockey,
basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
I think people are going to be skittish.
Not only that, basketball seems to be one of the sports where there's the most potential contagion for players. They're schwitzing, yeah, they're sweating, it's on the ball, it's everywhere.
Yeah, baseball is not so much.
Not so much baseball. Football, yes, they're wearing all the uniform, though. Maybe we'll have basketball with, like, full gear on. Or something like that. All right, so I want to tell you, so on this vein, I want to tell you about gloves. So I started wearing gloves more often. I'm telling you, I'm turning into Howie Mandel. So I had a box of these night trial gloves.
Yeah, the ones that the restaurants use.
Right. So I've used those before for cooking. They fit very nicely. They're blue. They're great. I never had any problems with them.
They're good when chopping habanero.
Yeah, very good for that. Yep, that's what I used to use them for, that kind of thing. But I started using them again, and I'm like, you know what? I really like these gloves. I don't want to run down. One day I was at Restaurant Depot. I grabbed recently two boxes. I saw it on the shelf and just grabbed two boxes, a large and a medium.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was. I wasn't really paying attention. I wasn't paying attention to the gloves that I had. Seemed like they're the same thing. Okay. I get home. These were, one box was latex gloves and one box was latex with powder. So I'm not thinking of anything. I'm like, you know what? There's a lot more in this box. I'll start using these. I'm using them for a couple of days. Holy crap. My hands. I got these rashes on my knuckles. Yeah. Oh my, what is that about?
I don't know. A lot of people are allergic to those gloves, the latex ones.
Oh, unbelievable. So now I got this dry, itchy rash on my knuckles. Oh, to add to my ailments. So everybody should be careful on the gloves that you're going to be buying. These nitrile gloves that don't have any latex seem to, at least for me, to be a lot better. Some observations and a question. So I went fishing this weekend. I said, you know, I got to get out of here. It was myself and my fishing partner. We went out, just the two of us, kind of being careful. And first of all, a couple of observations. The water was crystal clear. Gorgeous out there. I saw two pods of porpoises as I was running up to Boca. Three giant sea turtles just kind of cruising around. Got some fish, but it still wasn't a great fishing day. But I got about eight, what's called black belly rosefish. Fish for them in about 800 feet of water. I was wondering, is all this clarity of the water in the canals and in the ocean, as it's when you go in the ocean, if you get out about 3 miles, it definitely always clears up. But this was clear from the inlet all the way out. It was beautiful. I even went into about, my son was doing some diving for hogfish in about 20 feet of water. So I knew where he was. So I went on the way in to see him. Water was beautiful. I saw right to the bottom. It was gorgeous. So is this because industries are closed or something?
That's a question you have to figure out. I mean, it's possible there's just a lot of turbulence from the boat traffic that's normal. And it just stirs up everything and makes it kind of cloudy until you get way out there. Or I don't think it's because of dumping crap into the ocean.
I don't think that is either, but it's something different.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Maybe it was just a fluke.
It could be, which is a fish, by the way. A fluke is a summer flounder.
Yeah.
Zoom, you know that Zoom, everybody's on Zoom. You got to be on Zoom. And everybody's like,
you're the Zoom guy.
Yeah, but two U.S. state attorneys, the attorney generals, are looking into Zoom's privacy practices. Supposedly they were leaking information. I got about 17 updates this week on my Zoom system.
Did you hear about what happened in one of the, I think it was on the West Coast, some hackers got into the Zoom system?
And what happened?
Well, they were doing a remote learning with a bunch of like fourth graders, and some jerk off hacker apparently hacked into the system and then put himself onto the videos that the kids were watching and dropped his drawers.
Uh-oh. It's called Zoom bombing, by the way. That's what
and so
it.
This sort of thing is because they're so poorly, it's poorly designed software, it sounds to me.
Well, the problem is that when you go into a Zoom meeting, it's always the same URL with a meeting ID in there. So in theory, with all these people that are on, if you do a random search and try to, you know, create URLs and click it, you could just enter the meeting.
Okay.
And then if somebody's unsuspectingly not knowing how to use Zoom, because I've been in a few Zoom meetings, and for the novice, it's, you know, the people are just like, they got their face up to the camera. You know, all you see is their nose and their mouth. You know what I'm saying? And they're like talking and it's on. And you're like, wait a minute. The webinar hasn't even started yet. Why are you talking? And what are you doing? Turn your camera off. You know, and you see other people just sitting there. They left all the other people in the meeting, their cameras on, when it should be just the speaker moderator. So one thing they did this week was change the default to add a password requirement for a meeting.
Okay.
So that was something. But they're in big trouble. And New York State has said, nope, no more Zoom. I think the Pentagon and somewhere else said no Zoom. So really kind of crazy there. But I don't know, out of nowhere, it's like, oh, the Zoom is so easy. I've been on other programs and I've used a lot of other systems that are kind of either at the same level or easier, which have basically the same features. So I'm not exactly sure what everybody's attracted.
It's the name or something people like. I've been baffled by this myself because I know Skype does most of the stuff. If you have a good connection, you get really good quality of video, audio. And then there's the Cisco systems, which are commercial.
Yep.
WebEx, and they're very good quality. They're very expensive, but they're very good quality. And I don't, you know, this thing comes along and it gets all the attention.
And one of the things you could do that's really interesting is it's good for support. So if somebody, for example, let's say my, there's a couple of different ways to do this, but if somebody says, hey, can you check something out of my computer? So we go to a Zoom meeting, I request support, request desktop control, and I'm on their computer doing my thing.
I never allow that in a million years.
Yeah. I mean, I have people that there's some software and stuff that people want us to look at and check out what's going on. If they let you do it.
Go ahead. But. Yeah. You won't get that from permission from me.
Yeah. Okay. Quickly going through this presidential primary, Governor Tony Evers of Wisconsin issued an order postponing the election for 2 months in Wisconsin, or the primary in Wisconsin. That was quickly overturned by the Supreme Court, which sided with Republicans who said he didn't have the authority to reschedule the race on his own.
He didn't.
So I understand that, but I don't. If you're in a lockdown situation, it's probably not the best thing to do is to go into a voting booth, which people have been touching all the stuff. I don't understand how this works.
Well, they're going to have to come up with something.
President Trump
today. How about this?
Yeah.
It depends how much you're touching. I know it, when I vote, because we used to have machines and all sorts of things. They give you a paper ballot and you scratch out what you want and then you fold it up and drop in their counting machine and then you're out of there. You don't really touch anything other than maybe there's a pen in there and you can always wash your hands afterwards. I don't see the problem they have is these lines because they don't have enough polling booths. So they have these mile long lines of people standing 6 feet apart and it's like Costco, but everyone makes a big fuss about this. Oh, my God, these voting things, these people are going to, it's so dangerous. But meanwhile, there's the same lines at Costco, and nobody's complaining about people. Oh, you know, you're going to go into Costco, and you're touching a cart, and you're touching a bottle of wine, you're touching this, you're touching that, and there's a mile-long line out there. Where's the complaining about that, or Walmart?
I understand, but I don't have to be, when somebody picks something off of the shelf at Walmart and puts it in their cart, I don't necessarily know if they're going to be touching all the other stuff in there, right? All the other bottles of grape juice.
What if they take something off the shelf and look at the label and see if there's high fructose corn syrup, which I routinely do.
Oh, well, not
and
why not?
This guy, and I put it back up.
Who doesn't? So I don't know.
A lot of people don't.
Well, I thought it was really funny tonight when President Trump says, when somebody, one of the reporters said, well, what about voting by mail? President Trump says, no, no good. It's a corrupt system. It's led to all problems. And the reporter says, but you voted, you put your ballot in by mail. He says, well, because I was out of state. That's different. I'm like, what? How does that work? You know, if you're out of state, you could do, I always do proxy voting by mail, my vote by mail, always. I'm not standing on line. Not happening.
No, I do that too.
And then I'm going to get all nervous. I'm spending too much time. Places.
Well, it depends. I mean, I've seen it like in certain parts of California, they have a line that's a mile long so you can vote. So I've opted for voting by mail, but I know it's corruptible. I just do it for my
I'm sure it is. I'm certain it is. I mean, the whole system's corruptible, but I agree. You know, you're coming from I'm coming from a place with the hanging chads, don't forget.
Yeah, well, it's even worse there.
Yeah, the worst. All right, a couple of things. I'd like to congratulate you and me for something that we said and we predicted, and that was that a number of companies, including fitness club chain Equinox, Macy's, Steelcase, and other companies by the bucket load, are citing the federal government's beefed up unemployment benefits as a feel-good to furlough or lay off staff. They said that the stimulus package is kind of changing the idea for employers because now they could cut payrolls without feeling that they're abandoning their employees. So therefore, you're going to have a higher level of unemployment because of the stimulus package.
I believe that's true.
Yep.
And I think we talked about this before.
Yep. So that is coming.
It just encourages bad behavior.
That's correct.
But everything, you know, Trump has had this problem. Because he throws a lot of money into the system and it kind of encourages bad behavior. And what are you going to do?
Yep. And finally, in this part of our conversation, I want to just talk about the unemployment benefits, the PPP, and stimulus. So the bank estate websites are totally overloaded. I heard that New York, some people that applied last week started getting their benefits already. They got their state benefits, not their federal benefits. Florida, total mess. I've helped several people and it keeps on crashing and keeps on coming up with, you're not supposed to have to do the work, the career center and you don't have to be looking for work, but it still is a requirement and kind of check boxes. And it comes back with fill out your information on who you contacted to try to get a job. And then it crashes in the end anyway. It just goes through and it comes up with some weird script and it takes forever. And they haven't gotten back to people. Terrible. So many states are unable to handle the load, which is understandable. The banks are slow to getting the PPP going. I've helped several people on the PPP also. And you put your application in, and then crickets. They may send you back, oh, we got it. But then there's a second part, which is the requirement to send in your 940s, your corporate or your returns for your company, your payroll information, your projections, your rent information, and a variety of other documents that never come. So the SBA response to the $10,000 business grant, not at all happening. I put it in. I was one of the first my number is under 50. Suppose there's a room for 1 million. It's 50,000. My number was under 50,000. So I was one of the first 50,000 to put it in. And not a word. Not a confirmation. Direct payment checks, maybe ACH or maybe snail mail. We'll see. But again, just a point of reference. I'm bitching about this on one hand because I want to explain that, you know what, people are still suffering and it's a really big problem. On the other hand, I acknowledge that this is a major undertaking. This is a major, major undertaking. So the problem is that these sites are not built for this. And the thing happened so fast that they're unable to go through all these millions of applications. So the other problem is that it seems that there's so much demand for this payroll protection program that the Treasury Department is asking Congress for an extra $250 billion in funding, and it's going to be voted on Thursday. Another 250 on top of the 350.
Free money.
Yep. Free money for everybody. Free money. This is episode number 500. And we're asking everybody to chip in. I know it's tough times right now, but if you can, chip in and donate a little bit towards the DH Unplugged process, our need for ongoing sustainment. This is where we're this is a virtual plate. This is a virtual till. And if you can, go over to the DH Unplugged website, click the donate button. If you can't, definitely understandable. You know what? Don't. But, you know, if you need the money, I don't want you donating. It would be a sin. But if you can, you know what? We're celebrating this episode 500 with all the bells and whistles that we have. And click on the donate button. Give what you can. It would be great. I want to mention that, give a shout out to Tanya. And you know who you are, Tanya. She donated to a few charities to celebrate show number 500 on our behalf. I thought that was very nice.
Yeah. That's one way of doing it.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. A couple of things. You owe me a price guess for Costco.
I sent it in. You already have it.
Okay, good. So that's running. A couple more days where you can get your guess in. Only a few people are, actually, it's only about 25 people, I think. So I don't know what's going on there. You have the time, folks. Go over to DH Unplugged. Click on the closest
pin.
They're
all depressed. They're drinking too much.
Ah, could be. So we're going to run a little over tonight.
I'll tell you, this Costco thing is out of control. I went there today because we got up early. My wife and I went over to see what, because they're supposed to, if you're over 60 or 55, some age, you can go there at 8 to 9. Mm-hmm. And then, so I figured, well, let's see if there's any long lines. There's a lot. Not only is there a long line, again, like 100 people, I'd say, of 65 and older, like a bunch of old farts, mm-hmm. in this line. I said, well, that's terrible. We're not going in. I'm not going to wait in line just to buy stuff at Costco, because if there's places that you don't have a line, why don't I just go there? Do I have to pay more? Maybe, maybe not. Costco's raised their prices. But meanwhile, so we go driving to make the U-turn to go back in the other direction, and there's a second line.
Oh.
And the second line was the people that were sitting there in line waiting for the first line to finish with all these oldsters. And then they would start going in after 9 o'clock. The second line had to be a quarter of a mile long.
Wow.
It was into the parking lot, over toward their gas station. It was the second line was at least 5 or 6 times longer than the other line. I mean, it was unbelievable. We had to be 500 people in that thing.
Well, so you went somewhere else, I assume.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not gonna stand in line. There's no reason to do it.
Couple things that I want to talk about. We're running a little bit over tonight. California are considering the human composting. We'll talk about that next time. Luck and Coffee, interesting, quick drop. But we're also seeing a lot of things happening in China. After the close today, Tal Education down 21%, affecting a lot of Chinese stocks. After more shenanigans, we're starting to find out where the problems are. Luckin Coffee was down 70%. We'll talk about that next week as well. And I want to give a shout out. I think it's if this is a gimmick or if this is because it's the right thing to do. But companies like Allstate, American Family Insurance, Geico announced today that they're going to give back hundreds of millions of dollars to their auto insurance customers because people aren't driving anymore.
Ah.
So Allstate will refund about 15% of premiums paid by its customers in April and May, which could be about $600 million. Geico, it said somewhere around $150 to $200 per average per person of insured, of course, per policy.
They're probably making out too. Come on. There's nobody
making out because there's no accidents. They have no accidents. Right. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. All right, let's see what else we have here. We'll do a couple of limericks. I mean, or you want to skip to the stocks, or what do you want to do?
I think we should skip to the stocks. We'll do the limericks next show. We have plenty of them.
We do. We have a lot.
And we'll cut it short next time and do 5 or 6 limericks.
Okay. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk. along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures. So take the list. Kind of a weird list we have here.
Yeah, the list. Okay, we have the ones that we've been kind of following just as a lark. Allied Healthcare is up 20%. Medtronic is up 22%. So those were probably could have been picked. Then we have the casket companies, only up 0.5. That's a loser.
Yeah, dead money.
Dead money. And so is good one. Dead money. You were waiting for that.
I was waiting forever for that one.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that one coming too. Good one. Becton Dickinson, nothing. That is dead money too, in the more traditional sense. Then you have the Tivix, a VIX leveraged ETF.
Yeah, bombed.
Yeah, you got kicked off.
Yep.
It just got kicked off. So that it lost. You lost your ass on that. And then United States Oil Fund, another one. That was your pick, and that got kicked off. So this is going to get pretty risky.
But a 13.6% gain on that in just like 2 days.
Yeah, you did make money. You did make money.
Right.
But I've decided I'm kind of should be playing along. I mean, I'm just staying out. And so I'm looking like looking good. But I'm going to put a stock in this time.
Okay.
This bottom feeding, pure mm-hmm. bottom feeding. Mm-hmm. And it's insider bottom feeding. Let's put it that way. Howard Hughes Corporation.
Howard Hughes. They make the airlines. What is the H? What is the symbol on that?
I think it's HAC.
I'll see in a second. Control V. I think I still have that. Howard Hughes Corp. Yep, it is. Show 500. Control Z.
We have an insider buying. It's actually. It's not an insider. It's an investing club called Pershing
Square.
Yeah,
Pershing Square is Bill Ackman's company.
Yeah, and I believe it's a group of guys, isn't it?
No, it's his Pershing Square is his hedge fund.
Okay, well he's hedging $500 million.
Wow, yeah, he's putting somebody to work. I'm going to actually enter one more. I didn't have it on the list, but I'm thinking, I'll put it there. I'm gonna pick short on Facebook.
Okay, here we go.
Well, I think advertising, they have a lot of the components of their advertising is from small investors.
Yeah.
And not small investors, small businesses. That's gonna all but dry up.
Oh, that's gonna be dead. Yeah.
So they've
that
already talked about this.
It might not be a bad one. I'm not gonna poo-poo that one, but I think it's still Facebook. I mean, these are to me untouchables if you're going to try shorting any of them.
I get it.
And that's one of them.
It was down at 140s on the big drop recently, but people started buying up to 168. It was 171 today, closed at 168. Yes. So we'll see. It's up 2%.
It could drift down below 100. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yep, exactly. All right, we're going to end it there. Happy 500th.
And happy 500th to you.
Thank you. And I'll see you again in one.
Yep, see you next week. Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.